Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
I got a box here with me. You know...
Do you?
You know what's more exciting than unboxing videos?
Unboxing podcasts,
unboxing
clearly.
Unboxing podcasts.
Is there anything better, I guess, is my question.
Come on. I'm going to need to get my box cutter out here or something. Come on.
This is gripping podcasting. Well, I'm just going to keep... Gonna keep refreshing my little UPS page. It hasn't moved. The truck hasn't moved in like.
Here we go. 10 minutes. Oh, look at that! You can't look at it. It's a podcast.
I can't. I mean, Technically, ironically, we're on Zoom, so I could see, it, but the listeners could not.
That's true.
But our video isn't on, so I can't even see it.
That's true. It is. I'm gonna turn on my video just for
Dan.
Oh,
okay.
It is an Apple TV. 4K.
I like that the remote is very prominent on the box. They know what people are here for, right? They're not like, you don't care what an Apple TV looks like. That's boring.
Exactly.
You want to know about this remote.
Come for the remote, stay for the box.
That's right.
Or something. So yes, the most important delivery, as IMAX and
IMAX
iPads are also being delivered.
Whatever.
Is the Apple TV 4K remote. I did get the whole box. Because I gave one of my Apple TVs to Jamie for her college apartment, thinking there would be a new Apple TV imminently, which there wasn't, but now there is one, and so I've got it. So this is the week of shipping, the week of Apple shipping things, and I did my iMac review and my iPad review, which last week I couldn't talk about. I had both of them last week, but they tell you not to talk about it,
sure.
So I couldn't talk about it. It's a busy week, and now people have listened to me open a box. Because Apple is trying to be better environmentally. Here is the Apple TV remote wrapped in paper.
Ooh,
fancy. Right. It is a lot more substantial than the old Apple TV.
Remote. It looks a lot thicker in the pictures.
It is. Yeah.
Which is fine.
It's quite a lot.
I'm okay
thicker.
With that. I don't think that's a device that needs to be super thin. In fact, I think that's detrimental in many cases because it makes it easier to slip between those couch cushions, for example.
Yeah, and John Gruber is right that it is. I've got one of the old aluminum remotes here, and it's very clearly like just the next version of the aluminum remote.
That was a good
instead
remote
instead of whatever that Siri remote is.
There was very little wrong with that remote. And they tried to make some improvements, and we've talked about before, and some of those improvements are not terrible, but unfortunately they're couched in a design that is not great. And I feel like everything they did with the design this time is pretty solid, except for the lack of a U1 chip, which it should have. Or at least, at the very least, just like a little, speaker, like an AirTag speaker, so you can make it beep. Just in case you lost it.
Right. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Is you really just need a
you
beeper.
Really
on
just
my TiVo
need a beeper.
Remote has a beeper on it.
Why not? I mean, that's easy.
What? My TiVo remote plays a little song.
I wanna yell at my hey telephone.
Where's my remote?
And it beeps. That would be great.
And it goes beep 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 beep. Yeah, exactly. Like an AirTag, but it doesn't have to be an AirTag.
No, exactly.
Because it's not leaving the vicinity of your living room.
I hope not.
Yes, if it does, you have bigger problems.
Bigger problems. I mean, granted, if you had a bunch in the same house, maybe it would migrate or something, and it might leave the room or something. But yeah, most people, I think, are probably just need to find it when it's covered on the coffee table or fallen between the couch cushions or on the floor or something.
All right. Well, it's like a candy bar, a little bit. Nice. Anyway, new iMacs are nice. I've heard from a lot of people who say, that they are really tempted by them, except for the fact that it's completely inappropriate for them. And I totally get that because it's actually a really great computer that I could use and I would be very happy with. But I also know that there's another shoe to drop, right? The next generation of chips and presumably a replacement of some sort for the 27-inch iMac that's going to be more powerful with a bigger screen and all that. And because of that, even though I could absolutely just use my little orange iMac that I got over here as my main computer and be pretty happy, I'm not going to buy one because I know that there's you know, the next one. And I know the next one is always better, but like this is very clearly there's part of the building hasn't been built yet.
Right. I mean, it's what we said about the MacBook Pros and the Mac Mini last fall, right? Which is there's a reason exactly. Apple kept the Intel models at the higher end of the lineup still around. And it's because these are not intended to replace them. And the same thing's true with the iMac. There's a reason the 27-inch iMac is still for sale. It's because it's not replaced by the 24-inch. I will admit, I was one of those people who was tempted. I think I was mentioning in our member Slack that one of my cousins texted me asking about his old iMac, which was on like El Capitan. I don't know. Right. And he's like, can I upgrade it? I was like, yeah, I think you can get it to like High Sierra or something. And maybe that'll be sufficient for what you need to do right now. But then I had that moment of like, well, my 2017 iMac would be a huge upgrade for him. And then I could get a new iMac. It's like, but I don't. It's tempted. And I, like you, I could probably get by with the 24-inch model. But I feel like I've gotten caught on this with the Air already, right? Because I bought the Air when it came out last fall. And I like it. It's a great computer. But we also have started to now hear the rumblings about like the redesigned Air and people talking about the Air in colors and all of that. And I'm sitting there going, oh, I've never turned over a Mac within like a year. Like, I just don't do that.
Yeah.
But I will be tempted.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I bought this and I thought, well, you know, if they come out with something even better, I'm just going to roll this down to one of the other people in my family who has an older MacBook Air. But the truth is, that's how good the M1 is.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
There was a guy I muted on Twitter who was like, well, it's quite a contortion to refer to how great the M1s are and also say they're low end. But it's like, no, it's not. That's literally what it is the other shoe hasn't dropped yet. But the M1 is a low end chip, and yet it's faster in most cases. It's the slowest Apple Silicon Mac chip ever to be made, right? Obviously.
It's also the fastest.
It is also the fastest. That's right. But historically, it will be the first step. And they're not replacing the high-end systems. They're replacing their lower-end systems because that's where it fits, and there's something else coming for the rest of it. But my point is, the M1 is still impressive enough that my 8-core Xeon iMac Pro sitting on my desk is kind of a push with the new iMac. Mm-hmm. Like, there are places where it's faster because it's got, but the truth is a lot of those places where it's faster are places where it's faster because that software hasn't been updated for Apple Silicon yet. Like, I've used the Isotope sound plugins and they still haven't been released for Apple Silicon, which I don't understand.
I made the mistake of upgrading those and thinking the newer ones had been updated, and I spent, you know, $30 to update like two versions and was like, oh no, these still don't work. Never mind.
Yeah. I hold out hope that they will update that version instead of doing what I fear they will do, which is
charge you again,
update it for their next.
Low-end thing is interesting because, you know, I think a lot of people, what Apple didn't do, and I don't think they ever really considered this, was like, it's not like they put like an A10, you know, in the Mac and was like, oh, our low-end Macs are 3 years ago, the iPhone chips and iPad chips from 3 years ago, right? Like, no, they didn't do that.
No.
They're like, we're going to put these chips in and then the next chips will be even better and we'll put those on the higher-end version, which makes perfect sense. You wouldn't do it the other way.
And in fact, depending on what rumor you believe, it's entirely possible that what they're going to do is do an M2 that comes in variations. Mm-hmm. And one of those variations will be a lower core count. And all of these things will end up getting an M2.
Right.
But the Pro ones are going to get the M2X or whatever that's got more cores and are twice as fast. And so everything is going to get faster, but that the other ones are going to get twice as fast. And I say twice as fast, and it's like that's, you know, a 2X improvement. Is very impressive, right?
Yeah.
But if you look at the rumors, which suggest that the number of performance cores is going to double, I did the math on a lot of Apple processors from the iPad and iPhone era when I was trying to extrapolate Apple Silicon performance. And I will tell you, the number of performance cores, at least thus far, determines the speed. And so if you have four of them in one and eight in the other, guess what? For multi-core performance, the eight is twice as fast. It's like it's very efficient at using all those cores. The eight is twice as fast.
Right.
So you're going to end up with twice as fast computers. And that's the thing is, why would I spend money on a new Mac that's a push with my existing Mac? It's impressive that the low-end iMac is kind of the same speed as the iMac Pro from a few years ago. That's great, but not only do I not see a benefit because it's basically a push, but the better iMac is coming, and then I will actually see a tangible benefit to my job, and that's the one I want to buy.
Yeah, I don't, and I don't need to fortunately talk myself out of the supposedly rumored 20 or 40 core models coming down the pipe, because I'm like, that's way too much for me. There's literally nothing I could do.
Too many cores.
I don't need that many cores. I don't need 40 cores. Yeah, I don't think I could do anything. I mean, I guess my logic, you know, a podcast exports would go really, really fast. And that's probably the biggest part of it.
Well, they become constrained by storage probably at
right,
that point.
Right. But. Yeah. So, but it is one of those things where it's like, you know, I think that the M1 would be an improvement on my 2017 Core i7 or whatever, which is a fine computer still. I don't run into a lot of problems, but definitely doing some like the podcast audio stuff. And then I was like, oh, I wonder if I just did this on the MacBook Air, like would this be a lot faster? And I've done one or two projects over there, and I'm like, well, it's pretty fast.
Well, logic is way better for some reason on the M1.
Yeah.
Apple has really optimized it. Mike Hurley was telling that story about the member special that we did for upgrading Cortex, which just came out, I believe, this morning as we record this. For people who are members over at Relay, Brian Hamilton did a pass of it, and he uses my editing technique where he uses strip silence. And so Mike doesn't use that technique. So Mike gets it back, and it's got a million little blobs on it in Logic. And he starts to move it around, and it's slow. And he's surprised by this, which is funny because he doesn't use this technique. I'm not surprised by it. This has been a problem. It's actually better than it used to be.
I too use the mic technique, so I'm with Mike on this one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not Logic's not great when there are hundreds or thousands of little blocks, little clips in a project. It doesn't like that. But on the M1, it actually doesn't care, and it's fine. And there are no delays at all. And I don't know quite why and what is going on there, but it is Logic is an app that has been truly optimized for Apple Silicon, and it works really well.
Yeah, I mean, if you're gonna optimize apps, you optimize your own apps, right? Like,
right. Yeah. Anyway, I'm excited because it's the iMac is the first redesign that we've seen because of Apple Silicon, and I think that's what's going to happen from here on out. Is we're going to see new versions of computers, and probably not so much of new chip in case.
Well, why would you? Computers. I mean, you stack them next to each other, right? Put it, Imagine a MacBook Air in those nice new colors that we saw, or something similar to the iMacs, and put it next to the gray MacBook Air, you know, the current silver, you know, or space gray. And you think to yourself, which of these looks like more like a better? It's like, I want that. I want the cool, colorful one. That's awesome. Like, it makes the old ones look a little blah. And I know there are people who really want that conservative, like, silver color, and the silver color is there for them. But man, I feel like.
Right.
I want the colorful one.
Not everybody wants that monochrome thing. Yeah, it's it's exciting to think about it. I wonder how. I mean, not all of them will necessarily get redesigned right away, but I do think that the Mac Mini is an interesting bit of instructive information about this, which is that Mac Mini, people who've taken it apart have shown it, like, it's empty space inside that case. There's no reason for an Apple Silicon based Mac Mini to be designed the way the Mac Mini enclosure is. In fact, some of the time I wonder to myself, like, you know, do they have those laying around? Like, do they have a lot of extra aluminum cases for the Mac Mini? At least it's the silver color, so I guess maybe not. But like, they just didn't want to redesign the exterior, and they didn't feel that it was necessary. But that is the logical next step, is you start building your enclosures for the technology that you are building and not for the technology that you got from Intel. And that it has the potential to change everything, right? Like, the Mac Mini could be way smaller than it is now. It just takes effort on Apple's part, and it's easy for Apple to just put it in the old case. And that's true for all of these computers. Like, that, I'm pretty sure Apple designed this iMac for Apple's own processors and held it, because the old iMac, like the low-end iMac, didn't get updated last time. And the time before that, it got updated very sadly to older Intel processor generations, because they didn't care. And I got to think it's because they knew that they had the next one coming. So what does that mean on every other Mac that's out there now?
Yeah.
And that's, I think, really interesting.
Yeah, no, it's we've still only seen the tip of the iceberg of this transition. I think there are a lot of interesting things that you can extrapolate based on what you see right now, but it's really hard to figure that out without a second data point, it feels like, in some ways. Because we have seen that first set where it was just like, you know what, continuity, it's all about let's make everybody comfortable and feel like this is not a different computer. You don't have to worry about it. You can just get it and everything will work and it'll be fine. And then the second step was the like, all right, you know, the iMac is the interesting one. And I think I pointed this out in something I wrote, I can't remember. I wrote a couple things that I didn't publish this week, but I think the iMac it is in that area where it's the first like redesigned Mac. But it's not, and so like not the, like as we said, the same, you know, a new chip in the same old chassis, but something that's actively redesigned. And meanwhile, like we're kind of waiting to see where we're going with sort of like a redesign, a new chip and a redesigned, I don't know, the iMac kind of, it feels like we haven't seen everything about this yet just because it's only step two in the process. So yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting like point where it's in the inflection point, right? Like we said, because it talks about like redesigning it for the M1, and yet now we still have like a bunch of computers out there that also need to get redesigned, but will also have better chips than the M1. So there's still like a lot of open field, you know, sort of down there.
Yeah, and I don't know. Somebody asked me about Apple monitors. And like, can you imagine a monitor that's like this, except without the chin? It's like, well, yeah, they could totally do that. they could totally do that. The issue I have with modularity, and I think I've talked about this here before, but the issue I have with modularity is if you just have a screen and say, well, everything should just be a screen, and then you can attach your computer to it, or maybe you attach your iPad, or maybe you attach your iPhone, and it becomes a Mac, and then it goes back to being an iPhone when you detach it. And it's like, well, yeah, but I think Apple really believes, for some good reasons, that you're probably better off. I mean, look at this iMac. It's basically just a screen, and it has a whole computer in it. So why not just have the screen also be a computer?
Right.
Instead of have all the screens be dumb, and then you have to attach and detach things. It also means that if you attach and detach, that then somebody else comes up and it's not usable until they get a thing that they can attach to it. Like, I think that there's a really interesting thing going on when you talk about the power and the Ethernet being removed to the brick.
Yeah.
You talk about the rumors about, is Apple going to make another display? What's the future of the Mac Mini? We could throw in the iPad too, being able to drive external displays like the XDR at full resolution now with the new iPad Pro. And, you know, what is Apple's philosophy about where the computer goes? Because somebody said to me, it's a little bit of a thought experiment, but it's actually kind of brilliant, which is you could probably put the iMac in the power brick, the computer part, if you wanted to. And if you wanted to invent a connection standard that maybe is a little different than the one that they're using for power and Ethernet. And like, you could do that, yes, but do you want to do that?
Right.
At what point is that just a Mac Mini and not everybody wants that?
Right,
but
sure.
I don't know. I think it's interesting that all of these questions are kind of on the table because everything is so small and so powerful. But I think in the end, Apple wants to sell you all-in-ones. They still think that there's value in having an all-in-one, and that although computer nerds want to attach a unit of computing to an external display, a lot of people don't want to do that. They want all-in-one, whether it's a laptop or an iMac. And if you look at sales of Macs, most Macs that are sold are a computer with a screen integrated, right?
Yeah.
When you think about it that
way. I think the interesting sort of counterpoint to that potentially is that Apple does sell a lot of devices that don't have it, like, so they have, you know, they have a Mac Pro, they have a Mac Mini. Not selling a display means that those people who are buying it, and we're going to set the XDR aside for just a moment, means that most people
will be $1,000
for the stand, you know,
just to set it aside.
Yes,
charge. Yeah. So setting aside
that's
charge.
Right. Thank you. Sorry. And you know, Apple's not making money from whatever display they're buying, presumably.
Right.
So there is an opportunity there, I agree with you that...
I'm not arguing for Apple to not make a
display.
Yes,
but it shouldn't be the only one.
And the rumors
are. I agree.
But I think it's weird that, you know, because I've seen arguments that are like, well, if Apple makes a great display, why does it need to make anything an iMac?
I'm with you. People want the convenience of that. I know a lot of...
They want the whole thing.
Yeah, it's easy. Yeah. I mean, and I understand the people who get frustrated with, like, but it's so wasteful. Like, what if part of it dies and then the rest of it doesn't work? And it's like, actually, I feel like the amount of time that happens is actually pretty low. And by the time... Most of the people I know who buy iMacs just to use them, and I'm thinking a lot of my family, like my mom has an iMac, my cousin, as I mentioned, has an iMac, some of my other cousins have iMacs, and a lot of them, they run them into the ground. It's like a car you buy, and it's like, I'm going to use this car or this computer until it stops working. And it's not like 3 years later it stops working. It's usually like 9 years later. Like my cousin's iMac is a mid-2010. That computer is 11 years old. He's still using it. You know why? Because he's going to use it until it doesn't turn on anymore.
Right. And laptops are the same way, right?
Sure.
And I know, you got to take your laptop with you. But it's the same idea, is that the screen is integrated. It's a single unit. It wherever you carry it or install it or whatever, it's a whole computer and screen and all of that. And I think that the people who are really focused on external displays, and again, I think Apple should make one, and I'm even kind of intrigued by it, they are a very small part of the people who buy Apple products.
Sure.
Like Apple largely sells computers with integrated displays.
Yep.
Now, that all said, a piece that I'm going to write later today, I think, for Six Colors is for members, because it's my time and I haven't written one yet, and it's Friday, so it's time to make the donuts. But I look at the specs of the M1 iPad Pro, and it says to me very clearly, external display support is inevitable, and it means the iPad will be rethinking windowing, presumably in 3 weeks at WWDC. Like, I can't see you putting the Thunderbolt port on there and supporting the Pro Display XDR. And Apple talks a good game about, like, oh, well, you can preview media on it and things like that. But, like, I don't buy it.
Yeah,
I think
it's a ridiculous. We've talked about this before. Yeah. It is a ridiculous idea of connecting a $6,000 display to your $1,000 iPad.
So I think it is. I think that this is one of those cases where Apple is really showing its hand, which is the iPad connecting to external displays and being able to display apps on them is inevitable and is probably going to happen in. Be announced in 3 weeks.
I mean, to sort of segue into our, you know, the iPad Pros, which came out this week as well. And I put this tweet up because I thought it was interesting. I was reading a bunch of the different reviews, including yours and several of the other sites. And pretty much to a review, they're all like, this hardware is amazing. It's so powerful. The screen is great. Like, it really flies. It uses the same, you know, stuff that you've got in your Mac. This is incredible. The software is really letting it down. And you got to sit there thinking, like, assembling all those different reviews. And I had, like, screenshots of four different reviews that basically all said that.
I saw it.
And I'm like, Apple, if you're Apple, don't you want to stop that narrative? Because that is a bad narrative.
Right. And I feel really bad, especially for the people who work on hardware, who are like, yay, we did the hardware. Oh, the software people have let us down again. And but they're obviously well aware of it.
Sure. Yeah.
And they're not going to talk about it until they have a solution. But I was struck by something that I don't think I'm allowed to quote directly, but I'll just say that I talked to somebody who works at Apple at some point in the last few weeks who made a mention of why you use a big iMac screen, and they said multitasking for one of the reasons. Let's see if that was ambiguous enough that they won't get mad at me. Every one of those Apple briefings starts with, remember, no Apple said, this is for background, not for attribution, right? So anyway, I find it fascinating that Apple, first off, the idea that you have to justify why you use an iMac at all, but that's where we are with the iMac, because everybody buys laptops. Everybody has tablets and phones, and, like, why do you buy a desktop computer to put in your home? You got to fill some niches there. But the idea that they have to explain, like, well, the real reason you buy an iMac is multitasking. And I'm like, multitasking? But it's like, that word does not mean what you think it means. It is, what they mean is, it's a big screen. You can put a bunch of different apps on it, right? Like, literally, when you use a big screen that's not a laptop, even just in the Mac, when you use a big screen, you can have windows all over the place. That's literally, they have to, like, we've gone so far down the mobile device rabbit, or you wouldn't go down the rabbit hole, would you? I guess you could. So far down the mobile device rabbit hole that we have to explain that big screens mean you can fit more stuff on it. But this is where we are. And so we're going to explain this. A 24-inch screen, you can put stuff on it. But in the back of my head, I'm also thinking, this sounds a little bit like you're explaining to me how a big screen would make sense for an iPad. Because multitasking, right? It's not multi-window, right. It's multitasking. And that's how it's always called on the iPad. And I'm like, this actually kind of sounds like the corporate philosophy being built for the idea that you can plug an iPad into an external display and run apps in Windows, essentially, on that display, which is not at all unreasonable because you already have different screen sizes for iPad and iPhone, so those apps already run in different sizes. And if you've ever used a Catalyst app on the Mac,
sure.
Or especially if you've used iPad app on an M1 Mac, you've seen this in action already. So I feel like I've already heard a little bit of a hint of what that pitch is going to be, which is it's not yay, a big screen for your iPad. It really is. It's literally multitasking. And that probably goes for on the 12.9-inch iPad, like having used an 11-inch laptop for a long time and now a 13-inch laptop, you could make that same argument for a big screen like the 12.9-inch iPad Pro, that perhaps multitasking on the iPad Pro, even not connected to an external monitor, might be better if you could resize those apps and float them around.
Yeah, I mean,
and I know that's like heresy for the one window view of iPad apps, but like, I kind of would like it.
It starts to feel very, I think Gruber had some analogy about this, and I can't remember exactly what he said, but like, I kind of agreed with him in the sense of, you know, some people work better that way, but it does feel like you're just, everything is kind of squeezed and weird. And you're, I feel like I'm commuting, like it's always like I'm wearing oven mitts. And I was like, yeah, that's kind of how I feel. It's just everything's a little clumsy when I want to do stuff with multiple apps. Like I can do it, but it doesn't feel right. It feels very like I will frequently be on my iPad and I use slide over, I use multi windows, and like the number of times I still, years after they've developed the system, where it's like, oh no, I accidentally put that app into the split view. I wanted it as a slide over and I can't get rid of it on the left side. I can only get rid of it on the right side. And oh no, I floated this up here and I can't even find this app to put in slide view. I have to go back to the home screen and then launch it and then go back to the home screen, go to the other app. Yeah. And it's like, why am I doing all of this? Like, and it's one of the things that has driven me back more to the, you know, that and the combination with the M1 Air, like, has really, you know, made me turn to that much more as my mobile platform.
I get the idea of a one window mode that is kind of superior, or one or two window mode, but what the Mac has, and the Mac has a one window mode, and it has a split view.
Yeah.
But the Mac,
and I use those sometimes.
But the Mac, you can leave it. And on the iPad, you cannot currently leave it. And I think what I'm proposing is that you're going to be able to do that. I was using the M1 iPad Pro yesterday in LumaFusion. I was generating for one of our D&D episodes that's coming up on Total Party Kill, on The Incomparable. I have to take the video that we recorded live and the audio, high quality audio, and I have to put them together and chop stuff out of it, and I make the video episode for members of The Incomparable. There's a video feed, and it's also on YouTube. And I decided to do it in LumaFusion just to see an M1 iPad Pro do video, something that I do on Macs all the time. I wanted to see it do an export and all of that. You get to the export, and it's like, on the Mac in Final Cut, when I export a video, it takes a long time. Mm-hmm. There's a little background process thing you can bring up that shows you the percentage and all of that. But like, you start exporting and you just do something else while it does that. And on the iPad, and I am a big iPad Pro user. Like, I get to the export screen in LumaFusion and it starts ticking down that it's going to be, you know, who knows how long before this 2-hour long video is done exporting. And I'm like, I can't touch my iPad now. And, you know, I know that it will work in the background to a certain point, but like, this is the problem. I can't keep it open.
Right.
Unless it's right in the front. And I've done this with file transfers and exports in Ferrite and all that. And you end up with this weird bargaining where you're like, well, I want to look at Twitter while this is exporting. I'm going to open Twitterific in split view, but I got to keep the other thing open. And it's like, it's so dumb. Like, I should be able to just keep that window open and then put other windows in front of it. That's the context on the Mac. And know that it's not going to die because it's got, whatever, 16 gigs of RAM on this M1 iPad Pro. It's going to run in the background. But I have no faith in it running in the background because iOS is a system that kills apps with abandon when they're not visible.
Yeah, and this
and
is...
You can't do that.
Fundamentally the thing that I think we've talked about before, but... This is such an, in some ways, an unforced error because it's like it's a solved problem. It's like we have been dealing with multitasking for decades.
I don't think it's an unforced error. I think what I would say is that it's grown from the other direction, right? Which is the Mac was always multi-window, and the iPad and iPhone were always single.
Mac wasn't always multi-window. Like in the earliest days, you still had to launch an app, it took over your entire screen, right?
Sure, but multi-window in an app, though, right? Every app can have its own window. So it wasn't multitasking, but it was multi-window. Yeah. But the iPad was like, no, it's just one thing. And then it was like, well, okay, it's two things, but they're still visible. But the error is that it's been years now.
And they've doubled down on that, right? Like, because you have things like with, was it 14? Or I can't remember when they did it, but like the multiple windows per app that they overlaid on it. And you're like, okay, now you're just putting bad stuff on top of like bad stuff. And it's like, it's reinforcing the broken metaphor and it's making it worse.
Well, what's good about the multi-windows thing is the multi-windows thing really, at least a little bit, was there to enable Catalyst. Mm-hmm. But I do think that was laying ground, right? Because if they go to a true windowing model,
then they already have it.
All of those apps already support it.
Yes.
And so they can get there, which is another reason why I feel like this is inevitable, that they've been laying all this groundwork. But at some point, and I also get that it's a hard problem, because the idea of like completely reconceiving how apps appear and having a mode where they're not full screen is cataclysmic in some ways for iOS, right? It has never been made to do that. But I think we're there, and not just on external monitors, but also on just a regular old 12.9. I mean, maybe less so on an 11-inch iPad Pro, but even there, I used multiple windows on my MacBook Air on 11, and it was fine. Yeah. Like, Windows... You don't always need to be in full screen is the truth. And dragging and dropping between apps and stuff like that is so natural. And I feel like we're there. And I don't think that the iPad interface is fundamentally single window. I think that we just need a good solution here.
Yeah. I think the biggest risk right now, and I've talked myself into so much believing that this is happening, is that we have talked ourselves into this a lot of times in the past, and it hasn't really happened. And I have to think this is the year, and if they don't do it this year, boy, it's not going to look great, because then we're stuck with this hardware for another year that's fantastic and still feels like it's got software on it that is just not delivering. And that feels untenable to a certain degree.
Yeah, I tried very hard to be light on the WWDC talk in my review, because the truth is, I think Federico said, you want 10 things and you're only ever going to get 4.
Yeah.
And the truth is, we don't know whether WWDC will bring more to the story or not. We hope, but we don't know.
Right.
And so you can't really judge this product based on the dream of the future, because that's a classic tech blunder. You can never hope for future software updates to solve problems with hardware, because they usually don't happen. So I agree with you. I worry that we get so far ahead with kind of the wish casting that whatever they do announce will be a disappointment, not because it doesn't advance the ball, but because it doesn't advance the ball as far as we wanted it to go.
Or the direction that we want it to go sometimes.
Or the direction, potentially.
Yeah. It's a risk, and I agree. I feel like there's a lot of pent-up feeling about this, and, you know, as much as you don't want to judge these things in the future, because you can only judge by the product that you have in front of you, it is clear that that product has some flaws. And Apple being aware of those things is great, but, you know, at the end of the day, they need to do something about it. So we are all, I think, waiting with somewhat bated breath to see what they actually talk about, especially on iPadOS, because that is that is the big one this year.
Well, that's coming up. I say 3 weeks, but it's really two and a half weeks now.
Yeah, I mean, it's the end of the week, so basically 2 weeks from Monday. Mm-hmm. That's exciting. That's it's going to be. We were just talking about our planning for WWDC.
That's right.
And it's weird. Like I had a I was at my physical therapist appointment yesterday, and she's like, "Yeah, I don't think I need to see you for a couple weeks after this. So how about it was like this Thursday on WWDC week. I'm like, you know what? I'm technically going to a conference that week, so I think no. Let's do it the week after, because like I'm not going to the conference, but I also feel like I don't want to make any other appointments because I have no idea how any of this is going to shake out this year. So, you know, we got the template last year, but I think with another year to sort of refine things, I'm just curious to see what they're going to do. And, you know, 3 weeks out, two and a half weeks out, they haven't really given much else in terms of details at this point. So I got to think maybe next week they might shed some light more on some of that.
I hope so. We'll see.
Indeed.
All right. Well, that's all for this time, but we'll be back next time with more. Things are happening. It's all rolling. Off we go. Hope everybody enjoys their new Apple products they got today, if they got any of them. And we'll see you next time. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.